So the question is asked to the, from the master, do you see God? Guru Nanak was asked, do you, is there God? Can he perceptible everywhere? No reasoning. Christ said, what? Behold the Lord. No reason. They see, they can make others see too. Kabir says, I was under a delusion when I saw him within with my own eyes, now I am convinced that he's there. All the people at large are not convinced of the existence of God. Only such a man can be convinced who sees him. Those who do not see, they all let everything go on to their will and pleasure and to their betterment without their guide, God. When anything comes up very adverse, it's against God. So the Guru Nanak was asked, you see God with what eye? And he says, it is not the eye that is made of flesh and bones, but that eye is different. With which you can see God. That is called Divya-Kyu, distant eye, Shiva nature, single eye, or Chashma Bhattam, Persian philosopher says. So Samastha Braj was asked, how can we see God? Can we see God? He says, yes, we should be able to see God with our own eye. And we should be able to hear his voice with our own ears. Then how? He said, when you close your eyes, there is darkness. Penetrate into the darkness and you'll find light there. The very darkness becomes luminous. The very sound, the silence of the heart, sound is proceeds their form. Very silence becomes vocal. So who experiences it in that our soul? When it is withdrawn from the body and from all outside. So long as man does not know how to rise above this life of senses, he remains stranger to the other world and stranger to God and everybody. So we can't see him. The reason is that mind stands between us and God. Master says we have seen him in this man body. And why can't we say? Because he says mind stands between us and God. First thing is, you see, suppose there is a pond of water covered with wheat. If you want to see your face, what is it? If the water is taken off, all the wheat is taken off from the water, one little by little, and if the ripples are going on the water, they are stopped, then you can see your face within you. So this can be done only when you rise above your consciousness, not before. So they tell us, Master tell us, you have got the man body. Man body, highest aim in man body is to know God. If you have not known God, why are you glad that you have got the man body? You are the master of all you survey. So that can be seen only when we learn how to come out of the man body. Moral room gives it. Prayer. He says, oh God, send us such like man who can take us out of the box of the man body. This is practical demonstration required. One part is this. Three things are required. First, word guru. Guru means who can drive away the darkness from before us and manifest the light of God. Call it by any name you like. Word made light. Those with word made flesh can also give you contact with the world within us. The difference between average man and Master is that God is manifest in him, his word made flesh, that is also within us, but that is embedded, latent. So what he does is he draws our attention from all outside and takes you above the body level and you see. So Master sees God everywhere. You see, Masters always, they give out the same thing. Guru Nanak went to Makkah. There he was lying at midnight with his feet towards Makkah. His servants over there came up and rebuked him, "Why are you lying with your feet towards the house of God?" He politely answered, "Dear friend, I see God all around. If you think there's some side where God is not, you may turn away my feet there." Al-Nasai, and the Quran itself tells us, God is omniscient, He is everywhere. Wherever man gets time for prayers, all ground is holy, all is holy where devotion kneels. He is on all sides, whichever way you are sitting, sit down and say prayer. So these are the awakened persons who have realized that thing, that say that he can be realized within man's body too. But for that, first thing required is a master. The second is true living. Truth is above all, and true living is still above truth. Ethical life is stepping stone to spirituality. And the third thing is, there are two kinds of knowledges. One the exotic side, the other the esoteric side. One is ilm-e sina, the other is called the ilm-e safina, or the para and apara. So apara are ilm-e which outward exotic knowledge relates to the outgoing faculties, mind or intellect. And saints give you a contact with that power which is at the back of all creation. You are not in the outer, in all religions they got their own rituals, customs, modes of prayer, giving models of the light of God and the sound principle of God by lighting candle and bell ringing. So those are called apra. Reading, writing, reciting, you see, praying, visiting the places of pilgrimages, and all the outer performance, they form the, come under the category of apra. And that what leads you from body above, gives a contact with the God, into expression power within you, that is called para. So these three things are, but he says the world is not outside, outside also the whole world is the creation of God, that the house of God, but God is in the temple of the man body. He does not desire to tell us in the temples made by human hands, but he does desire in the temple made by him in the womb of the mother. So they tell, where is it? He says, he resides in the very body you are carrying. You are there and he is also there. And not that much, macrocosm is in the microcosm. The world beyond. Only we have to rise above the first plane, physical, and ingress into the beyond. Master, those have traversed into the beyond, what they have seen, what they have experienced, they are given in the scripture. So you'll find the right interpretation of the scriptures can be given only by someone who sees, who has experienced that thing. So you do it, especially at the level of intellect, you'll not be able to do full justice to the world. Some will say this, the other say. So Master says that he is within you. Why you wander in such of him in outside. Kabir Sarasvati, he says, he went to pay pilgrimage to Mecca. And the way God met me, he says, he rebuked me, "Well, oh Kabir, why are you going? Who told you I'm there? I'm with you. Go with you. That inside." So all masters say the same thing. So, he is with us always only who can see him, who sits at the feet of the master. And what does he say? He says, body is the biggest Veda, biggest Bible, biggest Quran, biggest scripture. Just read within your body. Just have such within your body. The masters who search within and transcended, they gave out in scriptures. If you also search within you, then you will also say the same, to see the same things what are given in the scriptures, and you will be able to give the right interpretation of what is given there. Not that one, but you will also see those things with your own eyes. So every saint has his past, and every sinner future. Bhule Shah says, God is within me, He is never away from me, but that I is not open to see. You see? For that reason we are always in what you say, away from it. We feel separation, you see? We feel the agony of separation because we have not seen Him. Pity it is, He is within us, we are in the body, and we do not see Him. On the one bed, we are there and God is there, and we are sleeping from within, awakened outside, by attention identified with the world outside. Although He is with us, never away from us, but we do not see Him. The Master gives God as a gift, excuse me what I say. So all Master says, God resides in the cave of this man's body. You have to simply go within. This is the biggest Veda, biggest Granth, you see, and biggest Quran. Outer things are for our guidance, what the Master left for ourselves. But if we have to verify ourselves, then we will have to go within and find Him. The question was asked by from Guru Arjan Dev. You say that God resides in the man's body. How can we find Him? What's the way to find Him? So he repeats, first thing required is it is someone who has unraveled the mystery of life himself, known himself, he has transcended into the inner planes, and transcended all planes, as macrocosm in the microcosm. Such a saint is required. That depends on the master. To whatever access he has got, he can only guide you up to that plane. If you meet someone who only goes into beyond, not further, then he can be able to give you, take you to the first plane, not beyond. That will access up to the second plane, he will take you up to the second plane. Who is an access up to the third plane, he will take you up to the third plane. You saw there is a reference given about jhana, that he was stuck fast in the third plane. He has got reference right now. But these are no explicit given. You see, references are there. But within the three planes, there they are coming, going, mind was there. The physical mind, and the astral mind, and the causal mind. Unless you rise about three levels, you are not safe. So Master says we should follow such a master who goes transcend these three planes into the beyond, first thing you are. If he puts on the way and gives some demonstration how to rise from the physical body, that is the first step. All further things follow. Now you say, what we are doing now, we are all following all practices, all of ways of worship at the sensual level, life of the sense. So we have to sacrifice life for that eternal life. Sacrifice does not mean to kill it, but to rise above it, you see. What does it profit a man if he gains the possessions of the whole world and loses one's own soul? Remain where you are in whatever social society you are living in. You are made with a very noble purpose to enable many people to derive this benefit. They started only when the master left the scene, left the earth, to keep their teachings alive. As long as their practical people, the people had the benefit. When time passed on, for want of practical people, the same good formation which was made with a very noble purpose, they dwindled down into stagnation, and stagnation results in deterioration. Master again come to take us out of this jhurvi. So first thing, Guru Arjan says, they require such a master who goes beyond all three planes. And he gives us his interest. And the question comes, what sort of teaching they give us? So he says, the God is within you. Unless you rise above the outgoing faculty, you cannot see. You see? This is the first step. We are under a grand delusion. This delusion starts from man body. We are the indweller of the man body. We are identified with the body so much so that we cannot differentiate ourselves from the bad one. The body is made of matter which is changing every moment of life. And the world around us is also made of matter, changing at the same speed as our body is changing. As two things are changing, we are identified with it. Then they seem to be stationary. It is optical illusion. So Master first advised how to rise above this man body, prison house of the man body, to be reborn, to be twice born. Learn to die so that you may begin to live. So first is, they give such like teaching, paravidya. They make the best use of the aparavidya, outer. This is only meant for the preparation of the ground. That is not true worship. True worship, as I told you, is to come in contact with the light within you, by opening your inner eye. And open your inner ears, you begin to hear the kalame kareem, the music of the spheres. Aristotle said he heard a voice which dragged him into the beyond, into the new world. Pythagoras said that the sound harmony of all harmonies could flow in light. Pythagoras, Aristotle, and also, what they called Zoroaster, also referred to that, unstuck fire. That their own words meant for that, and Sarosya. All other masters say the same. Buddha also referred to it. So this is the ancient wisdom which you have forgotten. Basic teachings of all religions, for want of practical, we have forgotten. Now, first thing is rise above body consciousness. We have got ego of the body. Really we have the body, we are not the body, but we are working at the level of the body, which is changing. It is a grand delusion, an optical illusion. So Master gives us a boost, demonstration how to rise above body consciousness. When you have got a stay there, then your whole angle of vision is changed. This body is the first companion that comes along with us in the world, but does not go along with us when we leave the world. How can you ever dream that those things which have come in our contact, being in the body, they will go along with us? That is why Christ says, it is easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than a holy man. So first thing I tell you is, just come out of delusion. As to see God in love, that love is innate in us too, because we are conscious beings, and love knows attaching to outside things, what is before us. This love should have been of the conscious self, the over self, all consciousness. Because we have not seen him, seen that we are attached to the world outside, which is called attachment. We go where we are attached. With the master grace, if you come in contact with that thought into special power, then naturally where will go? Where that light will come, guide us, and sound will direct us. So this is a delusion in which you are. Master's work is to take you of this delusion by giving a demonstration. To rise above body consciousness from day to day, when you daily rise, this is dying daily. Saint Paul said, I die daily. Those who know how to leave the body daily, well, there's no sting of death left. Oh, death, where is thy sting? They have victory over death, because they know how to leave the body. So he says, when you find you are also in the body, and whom you want to meet, he is also in the same body. Both are in the same body, which is the true temple of God. And saying enough, we do not talk to him. The reason why? The outer expression of the soul is called attention, that is identified with the body and all outside things. Identified, we cannot differentiate ourselves. The first step is to take you up. Your angle of vision will change. If you day to day follow that thing, then you are in the world, yet not in the world, you see. Because you have risen above the outgoing faculties, and to the outgoing faculties only outward impressions come with us. 80% of the impressions of the world outside come to eyes. 14 from the air, and the rest from the outgoing faculties. When you rise above, this is the place. All of the faculties remain below. When you got a footing there, then you have to make the use of the outgoing faculty as you want. What is different between such a person and ourselves is that we are dragged by the outgoing faculty like anything. And they make only the best use of the outgoing faculty which they want to do. This is first thing what the master gives us, a control of the outgoing faculty. How? By raising us above body consciousness and giving contact with the light and sound principle of God which is within us. When you got a footing there, then you can use your outgoing faculty at your beck and call. Then further starts, you see, when the world flashes and there the religion starts. Religion means reach back, lead you to bind. To bind back your soul to God. Yoga also means the same thing. That comes from the root yuj, means uniting with God. So this is natural way out of all the yogas you have got at our time. This attention, sutrati, I mean the yoga of the attention is the quickest, easiest and most natural way which even a child and young and old can do it. Only that requires first day some demonstration how to rise above body consciousness, some capital to start with. Then you have to dwell further by to living and keeping his commandments. So as we, you see, we do not rise above the outward faculty, the five desires attack us. Lust. Lust attacks to the eyes. You see? Ear is flared up, anger is flared up by hearing. The more you hear, the more anger is flared up. So more tasteful things wants man, mind wants. The more you give it, the more it wants. But the taste. And other outward factors. He gives you above it, then these all things remain below. You, on account of you alone, these outward factors as well. I think you might have got an experience of this in your life. When you are sitting in some, attention is absorbed in something, somebody calls you once, twice, thrice, you do not hear. That man comes up to you, dear friend, I have called you so many times, why don't you reply? You say, my attention was just somewhere else. So long as our attention is not with the ears, ears don't work. Similarly, you are absorbed in some thought, eyes are open, somebody passes by you, you do not recognize. Is it right? Because attention is not there. So it is we who are in the body and the outer faculty. And we are controlled by some higher power. So body is the true temple of God. Now, by giving an outer example, when a man has built one home, some house, building, he made it, he locked it up. So someone meant to take that house to live in. What is required? First to have the sanction of the master, owner of the house. When he sanctions, he gives to his servant, all right, go and open the door, give it to him. This is the outward expression. This body was made by whom? By God, in the womb of the mother. He locked it up and gave key to a word made flesh. There is servant, you see. And that sanction of God is required. God into expression power. He gives, when he agrees, he gives consent, then he makes him contact with somebody with the world made flesh. He opens the door and then enters. They break the shield of the eyes and the eyes, you see. We begin to see and we begin to hear. So the only way up is what? If God wants to bring back any child home, first thing what he gives is the company of the saints. This is only had when God the saints grace. And what they do? They open our eyes, see the light of God, and hear the voice of God. We take it back to the source from where it emanated, the world estate. This is the way. And sometimes we ask the masters themselves, have you seen, have you got out of this delusion? They do have. They say, yes, with the grace of God and the Guru with me, I have seen, I have come out of this illusion, and I see my soul is being united with God. So all scriptures are full of these things. The only thing required is some practical man who can give us a contact with that. Is a link between the man and God. Remain where you are in any social body you are in. Master, do not touch them. They come to fulfill, not to destroy. So man is a social being, he must have some social body to live in. There are already more than 700 social bodies in the world. So master comes at such a mind, such a time when there are so many social bodies there. They say, all right, remain where you are, but look to your own self. You are the indweller of the body. God is controlling the body. The body you are having is the true temple of God. Outer temple is made after the model of man body. Dome shape, long nose shape, chesses, marks, forehead shape and all, wherein you will find the two symbols of God, light and sound. So who is the better of all these things? These are symbols. Giving all men in those particular religions outer symbols of God in the man body to understand for the beginners. He says, what is the best of all? He says, where this light and sound is effulgent. That is best of all. And that is the true worship of God. And this is what the Master gave us to start. That is very how to say. So what is required of us is to keep His commandments and have a true life. And love and devotion also, I was talking about that. By word of mouth you have one third of the teachings and two thirds by birth and receptivity. That is the result of love and devotion. So this is God we worship and all what is worshiping. This is grace of God when He comes, brings us in contact with some such person in whom He is manifest. He can give you contact with God within you.
Good morning, and welcome to the Satsang from Master Kripal Singh. The recording that was just played was the conclusion of a talk called Nam Bhakti. It was given by Master on November 10, 1972, in Vancouver, Canada. Our reader this morning is Claire Stannard.
Hello, everyone. This is the second reading from Master's talk called The Search for Truth. It's an English version of a talk given in Hindi at Sawan Ashram, Delhi, first published in the March 1969 edition of Sat Sandesh. The first part of this talk was read on March 11th. Ever since I have come into the fold of a God-man, I have lost all sense of duality, and none is a stranger unto me. I am now a friend to all, and everyone loves me. This sin is the signal change that one feels in him when he begins to associate with a saint. One begins to love the world because he sees the power of God in everyone, without any distinction on grounds of religion, caste, or creed. This is the first lesson that one gets from a Satguru. Satguru is known for his all-embracing love. In his company, all sit together, forming one holy family. This is why Guru Ramdas considers everybody as his real friend and a close relation. On the other hand, we are all anthropocentric and have not yet known that we are brothers and sisters in God. All relationships of the world remain in the world when the soul departs. On the other hand, the Guru knits us into a kind of brotherhood that is everlasting. How? He places a common target before us, the ideal of God realization. When the goal is the same, we have to tread the common path leading unto the goal. Ultimately, we shall all meet in God. Once I questioned my master as to how all the disciples would meet in the end when each one has his own time and measure of advance on the spiritual path. Azur replied, "We have all to go across the river of life. Some may ferry over by the first boat and some by the next. Ultimately, the port of disembarkation is the same for all. We shall all meet at that port. It is therefore said, the Guru seeks his own and unites them in true relationship, which is eternally the same. This is the kind of relationship in which we are united by the Master. The people of the world come and go in their own turn and are soon forgotten. But the godly people remain forever with us, both here and in the hereafter. They speak to us of things that are dear to us. They, in fact, are our real companions. The birds of the same feather fly together. A devotee of the Lord delights in hearing of the Lord. We have respect for all religious leaders, no matter to what social order they belong or wherever they may happen to be. The distinctions are only on bodily level. The soul is the reality and has no caste, color, or creed. From the level of the soul, we are all equal. Herein lies unity in diversity. We have forgotten it. An awakened person brings home this fact to us. He makes us conscious of it. As we transcend the body, our consciousness expands and gets nearer to all consciousness. In this way, we become conscious of the purpose and plan of God. Then we realize that we are the children of one God, and all of us have to live together as brothers and sisters in God. Let all of us unite together as friendly maidens and sing praises of the Lord. After having taken to heart the lessons in God love from a God man. In Oriental terminology, God alone is considered as the bridegroom, while all the souls emanating from him are regarded as brides or damsels. Those who commune with the Lord enter into an eternal wedlock and are forever happy. The earthly unions are short-lived, maybe 10, 50, or even 1,000 years, if possible. Guru Ram Dass, therefore, advises us that we should learn to sit together as friends in God and take delight in nothing but talking of God. We can sing praises of the Lord only after a Satguru has given us an inner contact with God power. Without this actual experience, we do so only after reading of God in the scriptures or hearing of him from others. This singing is of a secondary type. But when we sing after having seen the reality and tasted of divine intoxication, our singing would be of a transcendental nature. What a world of difference between the two. The songs may be the same, but the singers are different. The devotees of the Lord remain in touch with the Lord. They see him face to face. They live in a state of perpetual intoxication. When they sing of God, they do so in a way peculiar to them. Theirs are a typical rhythm and strain. Their songs automatically flow from the depths of their hearts and deeply affect those who hear them. We cannot get this taste and flavor from the songs of those who have no practical experience of God. With an experience of God power in the God-man, we cannot but spontaneously sing of him. Satguru is the fountain of the power and spirit of God. He gives us a taste of that elixir. In his company, our intellect grows still, and we begin to rise above it. Without this integrated experience, our songs, however sweet and melodious, are of a second rate. Why? Because our intellect, all the time, goes on thinking of one thing or the other. This perpetual vibration in the mental zone proves a great hurdle in our way. We may start with the best of intentions and cleanest of motives, but we cannot stop the intellect from working. In the depths of the mind, undercurrents are perpetually in motion. In course of time, even the good custom corrupts itself. All thoughts, whether good or bad, take us into expansion. This being the case, our mind never gets stilled. Without stilling the mind, we cannot move ahead. It is only the mind in equipoise that can shoot ahead and find its way out. The question is one of single-mindedness. By sitting together in a genial company, we think and talk of the love of God and love of the God-man. This helps us to gather our scattered thoughts. It is therefore said, sit ye together as member of a single family. Sink down all differences and direct your attention Godward. There is a great blessing in sitting together. The Lord hath said, where two or three persons sit in my name, I am with them. Again, in sitting together, we try to understand the point of view of each other. When we learn the correct position, we become tolerant of others' views. And still more, we escape from the evil of double-mindedness. When like-minded persons meet, they would naturally talk of nothing but what is of common interest, God and the love of God. This would lead to singleness of purpose. Thus we are saved from idle talk of unduly praising or disparaging others. It is therefore said, when the entire creation is the manifestation of the holy light, the manifested beings are nothing but holy at the core of their being, no matter what their acts. The duality between man and man is only at the surface. Nothing is good or bad, but thinking makes it so. One may be rich and another poor. One may appear to be good or bad, but we cannot pass judgment on them. Each one has the power of God in him. We are all one on the body level, as all human beings take the same pattern within and without. We are born alike with equal privileges from God. God made man a conscious entity after his own image. Man is a part of all consciousness. It is by experience that we come to this conclusion, maybe after getting through the storms and stresses of life in the living present or in previous incarnations. Man is always in the making. He may learn today or tomorrow or at some distant date. We are all on the way. The real happiness lies somewhere else. It comes only by union with the whole. This is why Guru Ram Dass advises us to sit together in love of the Lord, for it would give us clarity of vision, and we will stand on terra firma. Besides this, there is no other remedy on the sense plane. O God, grant unto Nanak his heart's desire. Bring him face to face with the reality, so that he may have peace eternal. With this prayer, we come to the finale of the beautiful psalm. This is the highest type of prayer that an awakened person could make. Now we take a hymn from Guru Arjan, the fifth in succession to Nanak. Let us see what he has to say in this context. This talk, too, is similar to the previous one from his immediate predecessor, Guru Ram Dass. In the bottom of my heart, there was a keen desire to meet my beloved. Somehow or other, the perfect master has graciously fulfilled my long-cherished desire. The question, once again, is of earnestness. Do we really need God? Sometimes we do ask for God. Even our intellect also, at times, feels the need for God. But does our mind want God? This is the crux of the problem. We ask for things with mental reservations only if they are of any use to us on the physical plane. On the other hand, the mind is entirely dyed in the color of the world. It has no time to think of anything else. Mind has a great potential in it. What the mind wants, it fervently prays for. At times, it even cries for it. God comes in only as the means for the satisfaction of his worldly desires. And day and night, one thinks of nothing else. This is the actual condition of our mind. You can search it for yourself. Do you sincerely wish for God? No. We want him only as a means to an end, the end being physical pleasure and comforts. Otherwise, God has no meaning for us. It is a question of demand and supply. If we actually wish God, the law of nature comes to our aid. Where there is fire, oxygen comes to its aid. All that we need is to put our tongue, intellect, and mind on one level. Such an attitude increases the mind force. Where the mind force is strong, nothing can stand in our way. We must be true to ourself, and then whatever may be our wish shall be fulfilled. If our prayers are truthful and arise from the contented mind, then hearing them, God calls us to himself, nay, draws us on to him. What is a truthful prayer? It is one that springs equally from the mind, the intellect, and from the tongue. Otherwise, we are not true to ourselves and are deceiving ourselves and our God. Why are our prayers not granted? Because we ask amiss. To ask rightly what is necessary is the first condition. The second condition is that we should be contented with what we have and be grateful for them. Ingratitude is the greatest evil. What has God given us? All that we need and much more. Have we ever offered a thanksgiving prayer for what he has done and the bounteous gifts supplied by him? If we fulfill these conditions of truthfulness and contentment with a sense of gratefulness, he would not deny us anything for which we may happen to wish. If we ask for God from God with a sincere mind, he would never deny us. On the contrary, he would draw us unto himself. He is the knower of our hearts and readeth us correctly. We cannot hide anything from him with all our cleverness and cunningness. He sees right through us what is passing in our mind and acts accordingly. We cry for bread. We cry for our losses, but we never cry for God. Of Namdev, the calico printer saint, it is said that once the balcony of his home crashed down. His home folk asked him to call a carpenter to carry out the necessary repairs. The devotees, as you know, hardly remember such things. He went out as usual and sat in the sweet remembrance of the Lord. He forgot himself. He forgot the world around him. He forgot the balcony and the carpenter. In the evening, he got up from his meditation and went home. His people asked him if he had arranged with a carpenter to do the job. "I am sorry, I forgot all about it. I shall certainly call the carpenter tomorrow," he said. Some days passed away like this. Everyone at home felt annoyed and threatened him with dire consequences if he did not bring the carpenter the next day. "I shall certainly bring the carpenter tomorrow," he replied. Strange as it may seem, Namdev again forgot to get a carpenter. A man of God is always absorbed in God. How can he think of the world and the worldly things? They are of no consequence to him. Again in the evening, when he woke up from his trance, he felt ashamed. But there was no way to get out of the impasse. He sorrowfully waded his way back to his home. God, foreseeing his sad predicament, had during the day gone to his house in the garb of a carpenter and set right the broken balcony. When Namdev reached home, he was dumbfounded to see the work. It was a piece of rare workmanship and had been done in an unusually short time. He could make out who the carpenter was. None but God's hand could do this miracle. A nightingale can alone understand a nightingale. The devotee knew that his God had done the job. He took courage and pressed on to his lane. The neighbors flocked round him and inquired the wages that he had settled with his carpenter for such a wonderful piece of work. He replied, "Love is the only wage that my carpenter demands." The next question was as to how the carpenter could be called. "My carpenter comes when one cuts himself completely from his family," he added. You can now well understand the position. If you become his, he becomes yours. He then comes to you of his own accord without being called. Namdev was lost to himself in his devotion. He had never asked God to repair his balcony. God keeps the honor of his devotee for his name's sake. I would tell you of my own personal experience. It happened during the lifetime of my master, Hazur Baba Sawan Singh Ji Maharaj. My son was seriously ill. He was hovering between life and death. The physicians apprised me of the critical condition of my son. They even asked me to be prepared for the worst. They advised me to take a few days' leave so as to be near my son's sickbed. The next day happened to be a Sunday. I was due to give a discourse at Amritsar. It was a duty assigned to me by my master. I got up at quite an early hour in the morning. The premonitory words of the physician were still ringing in my ears. I felt that life and death were in the hands of other than mine. What could I, after all, do? To carry out the behests of my master was, of course, in my hands. I decided to attend to my duty and let Hazur see to his. I accordingly left for Amritsar to play the role that had been allotted to me. The discourse was delivered as usual. The weather was hot and sultry. I finished my job at about 10 a.m. I left the auditorium an hour later. As I was halfway down from Beyaz, I felt a strong urge to push on so as to have Hazur's darshan. I might have reached Beyaz at 1:30 p.m. Hazur was taking his rest. Learning that I had come, he called for me upstairs. He sat up and inquired, "What about your son?" I replied, "He was ill and somewhat in a precarious condition, but I had to discharge the duty assigned to me. I could not do anything more, nor was it in my power to save him by remaining there." My words appeared to make Hazur quite anxious. For a while he sat in silence. I quietly said, "Hazur, whoever thinks of you is relieved of all his worries. How is it that you are feeling so much for me?" He replied, "Kirpal Singh, you took the burden off your head, and I have to take it upon my shoulders. When you are so inclined to your duty, what else can I do? The scriptures tell us, the gracious Father hath so ordained whatever the Son asked for that hath to be granted. But what one should ask for, God or world? Nanak tells us, the humble Nanak simply asks for one thing, O Lord, plant thy lotus feet in my heart." This is what all the scriptures say. In the Holy Quran, we have, "I shall grant unto man what he desires." So the only thing to be desired is an intense longing for the Lord. If we are sincere in our search, we shall certainly get him. Once a little toddler was sitting all alone in a room. His mother was in the kitchen. The milk can was on the fire before her. The child wanted to stand up, but slipped and fell. Then he tried to pull himself up by supporting himself against the wall. His little hands did not find any catch hold, and he fell again. When he saw the door curtain and stretched out his hands to help himself, as luck would have it, the curtain itself slipped down the rod, and both came down upon him. In his helplessness, he began to cry piteously, calling his mother. No sooner than the mother heard his cries, she ran to the room without caring for the boiling milk and hugged him to her bosom. She took the baby and came back to the kitchen to attend to the milk, but it was too late to save the milk from spilling over. The child perhaps felt that he had known the trick of attracting his mother's attention. After some days, while sitting in the room, he again began to cry, "Mother, mother!" The mother could guess that he was idly indulging in a sing-song and did not run up. The child slowly came to the kitchen and inquired as to what the mother was doing. She replied that she was busy making dal. The child said he had thought that perhaps she was preparing some dainty dish much better than the milk, because she had not answered his call for a pretty long time. The mother replied, "My child, there was no anguish in your voice today." So you see, the question is one of inner craving. We crave for the mundane things of the world and do not wish God. God only replies to the cry from the heart. He does not answer to our oral prayers. While we sit in worship, our mind is running after family affairs. Excuse me, we are not sitting in the temple of our heart, but are practicing idolatry. God would never come where there are so many idols to attract you and keep you busy. You may better compare the state of your mind with that of the awakened souls. Guru Arjan's heart is aflame with the love of God and is keenly in search of ways and means to find his beloved. The only way to find God is first to find means to the end. God cannot be found without the help of a God-man. When you desire God with all your heart and soul, he himself provides the means. It is said that the simple squeak from a contrite heart reaches God quicker than the loud and long prayers offered in public by boastful people. When God resides in all hearts, he knows even the tiniest vibrations therein. He is the soul of our soul and is not sitting in high heavens. We can deceive ourselves. We can deceive the people of the world, but we cannot deceive the great power in us. If you are sincere in your love for God, God would surely come to your aid. His grace is beyond measure, and he would put some God-man in your way. It is a great blessing to meet a really awakened soul. You cannot come across such a one unless God desires it so. We cannot even know a God-man as we cannot know God. A blind man cannot find a person with vision. The latter may take pity on the blind man and take him by the hand. When our inner eye has not yet been opened and we are sitting on the plane of senses, we cannot possibly see the human pole on which the higher power is at work. Apparently, the God pole looks like any of us, and we have no means to understand his inner greatness. Nanak, you know, was called a man with a perverted intellect. Why? Because people had not the eye to fathom God in him. A competent master is a rarity. I'll stop there. I was reading the second part of Master's talk, Search for Truth, published in the March 1969 edition of Satsang Desh. Thank you, Master.
And thank you, Claire, for reading for us. There were 85 people at this morning's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for attending. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
Suggesting carefully, you see. I have nothing to impose on you. Just appeal to your common sense for your own good and for my pleasure. Why? My Master gave me the Godhead in this duty. Whether I fail or not fail, it is not my job. I have to do my best. The God in me and you will be helped without asking for it.